Solomon's Pearls by Matt Cowens, read by the author. This and other great stories are available at bluewoodpublishing.com. Solomon's Pearls. 6 months ago, it had all been so simple. Johann's life had been crumbling into despair and ruin. He had been on the verge of suicide, the rusty blade of an antique pocket knife poised and ready to rip a jagged hole in his scrawny arm to let his suffering run out into the gutter where he lay. He was at rock bottom, no hope in sight. His bloodstream was saturated with the fix. It had seeped into his muscles and burned up every ounce of fat and flesh in a million tiny floods of ecstasy. It had filled him with a need that would consume him. No matter how much he took, he would never feel high again. He had lost everything to the drug, and every second he was without it was agony. It was time to die. Then he met Solomon. First, the world exploded into fire and noise. The alley that was Johann's home swirled with the heat and light of Solomon's descent. Johann had been dazed, the ache of need compounded by the bruising impact of the air being torn away in a column of heat, sucked into a newly formed crater. Solomon had dragged him away from the horrors of that alley, swept away the pain and terror of withdrawal. With Solomon, Johann had known peace for the first time in months. Solomon had taken his need from him, taken his emptiness and despair, and replaced them with a warmth and love that Johann had never known. He asked so little and gave so much. Life was complicated now, because Johann had a future again. He straightened the collar of his robe, checked that the incense in the censer was burning well, and looked at Solomon in the mirror. The warm, brown, semi-translucent surface of Solomon's chitinous back rose and fell slowly as he nuzzled into the side of Johann's face, tiny threads of deep red trickling beneath the surface of Solomon's carapace as Johann's blood cycled through his body. Solomon's legs gripped Johann's face softly, one across the bridge of his nose, one resting across Johann's left eyebrow and gripping the skin of his forehead, and one stretching along the line of Johann's cheek and curling under his jaw. Johann could feel Solomon's other legs entwined in his hair. He smiled at the intimacy of it. Solomon's appearance was somewhere between an oversized cockroach and a crayfish, a six-legged insect-like creature with obsidian eyes, delicate claws, a flexible segmented shell and a long tail that coiled around Johann's neck. On his pale underside he had a retractable ovipositor, which dispensed what Johann had come to think of as holy beads. He was an improbable-looking savior. The face that Solomon clung to was gaunt but smooth, a face at peace. Johann had been busy since Solomon had saved him, working tirelessly to build his church and gather his followers. The ravages of the fix were evident in the slightness of his frame and thinness of his skin, stretched like paper over his skull and traced through with pale blue veins, but there was a purpose to his movements and a spark in his eyes which bore witness to his vitality and strength. He had survived the horror of the fix thanks to Solomon. Now he had work to do. He was not going to let his savior down. There was a gentle knock, and the door opened halfway. Patrice leaned through and smiled warmly at Solomon and Johann. "We're ready," she said simply, her tone hushed. Johann remembered with perfect clarity the image of Patrice outside the compound gates 5 weeks earlier, a knapsack over her shoulder and a look of pleading hope on her face. She'd been lost in the outside world, lost and alone. The congregation had welcomed her. She had been one of the last to join their church. She was one of the lucky ones. Johann could see how excited she was to be the one to fetch him. He smiled and felt Solomon's pleasure too. "So are we, sister," he replied, standing and lifting the censer. "So are we." In the main room of the compound, the fellowship waited expectantly, ready to receive the sacrament. It was a converted scout hall, complete with faded green walls, old wooden seats and a basketball hoop at each end of the hall attached to the walls. The exposed wooden beams above the congregation were showing their age, dried and cracked, but still sturdy and reliable. Something about their durability reassured Johann. Those beams had stood the test of time, had supported the heavy roof and sheltered countless gatherings. The beams endured. There were a few members of the congregation absent, manning the gun towers and casting pitying looks down on the assembled federal agents and media outside the compound walls. It pained Johann to have to exclude members of the church from the sacrament, but the outside world must be kept at bay. The siege had been going on for weeks already. The number of federal agents had remained constant, enough for a show of strength, but not an invasion force. Not yet. They were blocking access to the compound and making daily demands to be allowed onto the site. There weren't as many cameras now as there had been in the beginning, but the big networks were still willing to keep people on the ground in case the Church of the Divine Visitors turned into another Waco. Johann felt genuine pity for the cold-faced men and women beyond the perimeter. The agents were convinced that the church was a front for something terrible, something sinister. The components he had purchased would make no sense to them, but the firearms and fuel were enough to raise flags, as was the stockpiling of rations. Knowing how the media would view Solomon and how rumours would spread, Johann had prepared for the worst and, in doing so, had brought the scrutiny of the government onto his flock. It could not be helped. He'd needed to build the church to gather his congregation. Johann stepped onto the small collapsible stage at one end of the hall and raised his hands to silence the congregation. Almost 100 eager faces looked up at him as he gestured for them to sit. The steady whopping of distant helicopter blades provided a backdrop to his words. "Brothers and sisters, the world outside does not understand us, cannot understand us. They have not tasted the blessing that has come. They have not known the joy, the peace, the belonging. But we know. We know how good and how right it is. Do not be afraid. Solomon has led us this far. He will not let us down." He stroked the carapace of the creature on his face and it vibrated gently. It whispered to him, encouraged him. With its voice in his head, Johann was free from doubt and worry. "Come and receive the sacrament, my friends." The congregation pressed forward as Solomon began to vibrate more quickly. Johann could feel the kitten-sized creature humming as it fed off the energy and excitement of the room. Solomon drank deeply from Johann, cycling his blood more quickly, and Johann began to feel faint. He reached out one hand to grip the homemade pulpit. Solomon shuddered slightly and began to excrete a string of tiny pearls which slid along his tail and around Johann's neck, a warm, inviting necklace. Members of the congregation reached out carefully to pluck them from Johann's neck and swallow them delicately, one apiece. One was always enough. There was no jostling, no rushing, as the congregation filed past. There would be enough for everyone. Johann reached out a shaking hand and touched each member of his flock on the forehead as they leaned forward to take a pearl. At the end of the procession, Sarah, a kind-faced woman in her mid-40s whose children and husband had died in a car crash 2 months earlier, reached out and plucked a pearl. She placed it reverently on Johann's tongue. She had been distraught when he found her and invited her to join the congregation, but now she was smiling again. He smiled back at her, his head swimming with love and contentment, and swallowed the pearl. As the pearl dissolved, Johann knew bliss once more. First, he heard Solomon's warm voice in his head, clearer and more reassuring than ever. Then he felt the minds of the congregation, 100 psyches nuzzling his own, just as Solomon embraced his face. Solomon spoke to them all. The warmth of the hive moved him, filled him with a deep sense of wonder that was far greater than any narcotic. They moved as one. They laughed as one as the pearls united them. They worked as one. Down through the trapdoor, along the tunnel into the hothouse, bodies pressed close together as they pushed forward, excited as children sneaking down to their grandparents' kitchen to steal a midnight cookie. The humid air steamed up the glass roof and walls, turning them opaque. Tropical plants released exotic aromas amid other plants, giant twisting shapes that had no place existing on Earth. Solomon's plants. Amongst the leaves were hundreds of pods, seed pods with tiny shapes inside, overgrown insects with broad backs and long tails, wriggling into consciousness. As Johann and the others spread out among the pods, the hothouse vibrated with the conscious, interconnected love. "Hello, little one," Sarah said softly to one of the pods. She stroked its mottled surface. "Let me bless you with my waters." She reached over to a bench, took a sharp-bladed craft knife, and rolled up her sleeve. Dozens of scabs, scars, and scratches crisscrossed the skin of her arm. "You know what I mean," she added with a smile. Johann knew that she was laughing at the words, the fiddly, messy human words that were getting in the way of her thoughts. Around them, the other members of the congregation murmured to the seed pods, caressed them, fed them. Later, when the congregation had bandaged each other up and were back in the mess hall, Johann addressed them again. "Solomon is pleased. His children will soon be born and can spread through this world, taking his message of peace and tranquility with them. But he needs our help." He could see that his followers were tired. The sacrament had taken a lot out of them, but the ships were not ready, not complete. The parts were all there, the engines assembled and the housings in place, but they were not fully operational. Johann knew Solomon looked different to the prophets that had come before, that the outside world distrusted him. How long would it be until they stormed the place? "When we have eaten, we must go to the workshop. We must finish tonight." The sacrament had almost worn off. Johann could no longer hear the thoughts of his flock, but he could still feel their emotions. Despite their exhaustion, the image that had been burning in all their minds, the image of the hothouse exploding like a dandelion ball into hundreds of seeds, each hoping to find fertile soil in which to grow another church, drove them on. They returned to work. Love for Solomon and his vision had pushed them all beyond any limits they had known for weeks now. The work of constructing the ships was intricate and exacting, but with Solomon sharing his knowledge and his expertise through the sacrament, they had learned to do the impossible, to build a fleet beyond the understanding of human science, and to love doing it. He was the best thing that had happened to any of them, and Johann felt it not only with his own heart, but with the hearts of dozens of others too. At midnight, the federal agents cut the power. The workshop was plunged into darkness momentarily, but the hands of the congregation did not stop moving. Their hands knew how to assemble the ships, constricting like tiny claws and locking the pieces together. They barely noticed when the backup generator kicked in and the lights flickered back on. They were done. Slipping silently into the tunnels, they each carried a completed ship to the hothouse, their arms gently embracing the precious vessels. At 1, a pair of special operations officers placed explosives on the generator. At 1:05, they detonated them. In the main guard tower, Stephen Anderson, a former soldier who had lost a leg in Afghanistan, spotted dark figures moving past the main gate as the lights went out again. They were inside the perimeter, moving fast. Johann had instructed him not to use force unless it was absolutely necessary. He'd been patient, but he knew the time had come. He had something worth fighting for, worth killing for, worth dying for. He whispered a prayer to Solomon, raised his assault rifle, and opened fire. Bullets tore into the ground and into one of the agents, a father of three. The first bullet struck his body armor and shattered his shoulder. The second caught him in the hip, tearing through fabric and flesh. He did not cry out as the impact of the bullets lifted him off his feet, slammed him into the corner of the gate. His partner dragged him back to the hole in the fence they'd entered through. Stephen watched them go with grim determination, hoped they would be the last. At 2, a light armored vehicle roared into life, bounced across the darkness of the field beyond the compound, and deployed a flamethrower onto the rear fence. The fence crackled and warped as it was consumed in a column of fire which slowly spread, accidentally setting the schoolhouse on fire. Agents moved swiftly behind the vehicle, spreading out and waiting for the flames to die down. The gun tower spoke again as Stephen fired warning shots into the darkness, while his partner, Emilio, radioed in a report to Johann. At 2:05, Johann called the guards down from the towers. The entire congregation gathered in the hothouse. Stephen and Emilio fired a burst of shots into the night, then hurried into the tunnels, Stephen fighting his prosthetic leg the whole way. They emerged from the tunnels and into the hothouse, expecting to find the congregation in a panic, but the atmosphere was electric and exultant. Despite the chaos outside, there was a mood of celebration. Johann walked through the steamy jungle and thanked each of his flock in turn. Beside each of them, a seed pod nestled in the pilot's compartment of a small ship, ready to hatch. He smiled reassuringly at Stephen and Emilio as he passed them, pointed to two ships which stood waiting. He clambered up onto a bench, his bare feet scratched and torn by shears, barbs, and a bloodied craft knife. Solomon didn't let him feel it. "My friends, the time has come. Stand by your ships." Solomon shivered, and a gentle sigh rose up from the congregation. The children were waking from their long slumber. Johann gripped the rungs of the ladder which ran up the inside of the hothouse wall and climbed steadily to the reinforced lookout on the roof. As he flicked the light on, he saw a flash out in the dark beyond the fence and heard the impact of a bullet ricocheting off the reinforced observation window. He'd given orders that the lookout be built to withstand any assault, and he smiled as he saw how good a job his followers had done. They truly loved him. Through the observation window, he saw the scurrying figures of agents sweeping the compound with their flashlights, night vision goggles, safety protocols, and hand signals. He had watched them for weeks now, out beyond the perimeter, planning, observing, and judging. Another bullet ricocheted off the window, and Johann took a step back, pulling the shade down. They'd seen where he was. They'd come for him soon enough. He reached over to a junction box and flipped the lid open. Inside was an orderly tangle of wires and switches. He'd never looked at it before, but he knew exactly which switch to flip. His instructions had been followed to the letter. "Good luck, my children," he whispered as he flipped the switch. The glass roof of the hothouse shattered into a million bright shards as the charges blew. The tiny explosions of the blasting caps shone out like stars in the darkness, like the many stars that Solomon had watched burn into oblivion on his journey. Solomon, the last of a dying race, had found on this ball of mud a tiny, flickering hope for a future. Solomon, whose eons-old ark had finally crash-landed in an alley next to a suicidal drug addict who had gone on to build him a church. Solomon, who had taken a human name to help the sadly limited creature who provided his nourishment to understand the thoughts of something ancient. Solomon, whose children would change the world. In the hothouse below, the deadly glittering rain of glass fell on the congregation. Safe in their ships, Solomon's children felt the flash of life flickering out as blood washed over them, fed them, brought them to full consciousness. 100 lights shot out, screaming into the night. Ships, each carrying a child and washed with the blood of a follower, shot into the air and disappeared into the night, their propulsion systems humming, their newly woken pilots eager to find hosts. Solomon was happy. After eons of searching, his race had finally found a new home. Johann was almost spent now, but it didn't matter. An agent would come. Solomon would endure. As the armored vehicle crashed into the mess hall, the gas ovens exploded, and random bursts of gunfire sounded in the night. He watched the last ship until it was out of sight. Matt Cowans is a writer in high school English and media studies teacher living on the Kapiti coast of New Zealand. He has taught English in Japan, designed and produced card games, written and illustrated comics, and is an enthusiastic amateur video maker. His writing blog can be found at www.mattcowans.livejournal.com. And this story, Solomon's Pearls, can be found at bluewoodpublishing.com. The cat that can be heard purring through parts of this recording is a tortoiseshell called Austin.